the buzzer, McCord on its way.
Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to the world's greatest podcast. We've got Bill Self coming up. A lot of news last night. Jalen Johnson takes a hike on Duke. 3 weeks left, said Greenberg. I saw you on SportsCenter, and I thought you handled it well. Repeat what you said.
Well, it's all semantics, but he didn't opt out. He quit. I mean, you got 3 weeks to go. He played the last two games. So if you talk about his health, if he wasn't healthy, why did he play the last two games? He cleared out his locker. You're talking about Duke University, a world-class medical center. If you want to take care of your body and get help medically, I would think you'd stay at Duke. But he picked up and he left. He left his team. He left his brotherhood. He left everything else that was part of Duke. Now, here's the deal. Yeah, I said it in the Notre Dame game. And when he didn't play at the end of the Notre Dame game, I said, something's up. I came on the air. I said, something is up. And then he played 8 minutes against NC State because other guys were playing harder and playing better. So basically, from what I'm hearing is his people said, you know, it's not his best interest to stick around. Now, I got to give Duke credit. They went to some New York PR firm and got this glossy declaration of, you know, how it was the best for everyone. He's always going to be a member of the Brotherhood and all that stuff. And look, you got to do that. And I understand that. But in essence, like, here's the deal. If you opt out, this is what you do. You say, you know what? I'm not healthy, whether it's mentally or physically not healthy. But these are my brothers. This is my team. I'm going to stay with these guys. I'm going to be on the bench. I'm going to stand by them. But I'm just not able to play. When you pick up and leave, you quit. I mean, it's that plain and simple. You're walking away from the group of guys that you started the season with. So, I mean, to me, I don't understand how it can be perceived any other way than he quit on his team, whether he quit on it in terms of his basketball, he quit on it in terms of other reasons. Now, look, I do think this, Dan. These kids have such unrealistic expectations. Their families have unrealistic expectations. Their circle of influence has unrealistic expectations. When those expectations aren't met, I think it suffocates these kids. It exhausts these kids. The idea that transition from high school to college is a lot harder than it looks. Everyone thinks it's hard, and that jump from high school, college to the NBA is ridiculous. But let's call it what it is. The dude quit on his team. There's no debate on it. You can trick it around and call it opting out, use semantics or a different word, but he quit. End of conversation.
You know, you give Duke a lot more credit than I do. I just find it amazing that the institution at Duke, one of the great institutions in the world, right, has to acquiesce to an 18-year-old and hire a New York firm to make everybody happy. Like, you can't come out and say, as Coach K, the representative of Duke, the number one representative of Duke University. In fact, I looked up some Duke stuff, and everything. Notable alumni include Melinda Gates, Carlos Boozer, you know, I mean, they got all these basketball players, and we have to acquiesce to 18. We can't tell the truth about 18 to 22 year olds, because there's no way in hell Coach K, unless he's really changed, is all that flowery about this. But we can't do it. Even at one of the great academic institutions, even at a place where people come internationally to study, we've got to acquiesce publicly, the face of the university, to 18 to 22 year olds. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Name me another, maybe the entertainment industry, name me another industry that has to do this to 18 to 22 year olds, yet will tell you that nobody should tell these kids what to do. Going to school and being the face of Duke doesn't matter. It's all about getting to the NBA. And hey, good for him, probably good for Duke, but it fascinates me that nobody, I mean, John Thompson wouldn't have done, I mean, it fascinates me in this day and age, we've let our sport get to the point where we have to hire, as you said, a New York law firm to make us look okay for the next guy that may want to come while representing the, I don't know, top 10 top 20, top 12, whatever it is, universities in the country. It's the funniest thing to me that we've allowed our sport to get to this point, and it ain't stopping. It is not. Hey, if a kid wants to go, man, go. You're not allowed. You know, I heard so many in the last couple or 12 hours basically about you, me, anybody else. Well, these old white guys telling kids what to do. I'm not telling nobody nothing. But I do still believe in team. I do still believe in commitment to a degree. Hey, look, to a degree. But with 3 weeks to go, hey, that's straight quitting. But, man, I just get a kick out of it. I just get a kick out of how the greatest coach in the history of our sport or whatever we say has to acquiesce like this. It's embarrassing, frankly, for the sport.
Yeah, and like I don't know if it's an actual New York, you know, PR firm, but that's where it came across, some glossy thing, you know. Oh, you know, we're all I mean, like, here's the deal. I mean, like, the dude's circle of influence decided it was right for him. Now, this is the same guy that went to 3 high schools, if I'm not mistaken. So
we're not allowed to say that, Seth.
Fact.
I know.
I mean, like, so here's my bigger question. I'm an NBA team, and our people have them like 6th or 8th in the draft, which is crazy. When are we going to put an emphasis on winning players? Here's the deal. The NBA is so young. Isn't it amazing Sadiq Bey is playing well? Isn't it amazing Tyrese Halliburton's playing well? Isn't it amazing Jalen Brunson's playing well? Isn't it amazing, like, hey, look, there are outliers. I mean, like, the ball kids have a nice season. But isn't it amazing that the guys that translate and the winning teams that have winning cultures and tough guys and winning players win year after year after year? You think that the Miami Heat are taking guys that are low character and not competitive? You think the San Antonio Spurs – you know, even like, you know, right now, as the Lakers rebuild their stuff, or the Golden State Warriors, or, I mean, like, to me, it's almost comical that we get seduced by potential. And I understand that the NBA is a futures market. I understand the draft is, but the league is getting so young. But let me ask you a bigger question. This whole idea of opting out, I think it trickles down from seeing NBA guys go, all right, I don't want to play for this team. I want to play for that team. I'm not going to show up to training camp. It goes this whole Deshaun Watson thing where, you know, he's making a gazillion dollars. He signed the contract. No one made him sign the contract. And yet, you know, quite honestly, you know, he says he's not going back. And look, hey, I had a contract that, so just so people don't at me, I had a contract at Long Beach State and I had a contract at South Florida. And you know what? When I left those places, I paid a buyout. Right. I made a choice and I paid to buy it. I did it at the end of the season. But I just, you know, this is not going to be the first opt out of the next month. You're going to see teams opt out. You're going to see players opt out. You're going to see players that can return to campus opt out because they're going to put their name in the transfer portal. You're going to see players opt out because they, you know, quite honestly, they're not going to play in the NCAA tournament and they want to get, quote unquote, ready for the draft, which I get a kick out of, because, like, so your college coach you decided to play for can't help you get ready for the draft, but a workout guy can get you ready for the draft. So the guy you played for and chose to play for, he can't help you get better, but some guy that you entrusted or sold you on something, he can help you get better. I just, that's one of those head scratchers to me.
See, I go the other way with it. I think it's the other way. I think, sure, kids see NBA players leave, and I do think most things trickle down, but I kind of go the other way. I kind of say it starts from the bottom up, meaning I see so many kids walk on AAU teams to other teams. I see so many kids leave high schools now. We've made high school so easy. Like, it used to be, man, high school was no different than college. Like, you transfer, you got to go through a thing, and you're going to sit out a year. But I don't look at it as it trickles down from the NBA. I look at it as it's filling up. You know, you said this kid's been to 3 high schools, you know, and again, I'm not judging anybody. We're just talking because we both love the game. And I had a contract. Actually, I didn't have a contract in West Virginia. A lot of people are coming at me saying, well, you left West Virginia. You're damn right. President University threatens me. My ass ain't staying and working for him. Now, if the president of Duke threatened Jalen Johnson, he should leave. But I don't think that's what happened. Maybe it did. I don't know. But my wife and I got threatened in West Virginia by a man named David Hardesty. Told him to stick it up his ass, and we left. If that's what happened to Jalen Johnson, then fine. But anyway, yeah, Seth, I think
it's never a good thing to tell the president to stick it up his ass if you're on the campus thinking you're taking your job.
Well, I already took it. I already had a press conference. But when he threatened my wife and I with he will destroy us, slap the table, I will destroy you. Like, my wife stood up and I looked. I go, what? She never spoke. She goes, what do you mean destroy us? And, you know, from there it went. But anyway, people are all over me for it. Hey, if that's, you know, if that's what happened to Jalen, then I'll applaud him for leaving. But I think it goes the other way. And it's like, Seth, it's like I got one friend who robbed stuff. Okay. He went to jail when we were, you know, in high school and college. And he's like, you know, first time's the hardest. Second time, a little bit easier. Same thing with quitting. Same thing with cheating on your wife. Same thing. I mean, you know, so it gets easier. Now, I'm not here to moralize anybody. But we do, we are, you and I, are paid to talk about college basketball. And the idea that everything, and I mean, this is what came out the most last night to me, everything in people's mind is about getting to the NBA. Everything.
Like, yeah, there, I agree.
If you talk about playing hard, some guy says, don't give me that old cliche about teamwork and playing hard. And I'm thinking to myself, that old cliche is a cliche because it'll serve you in the long run. Last thing, Seth, and then I'll go back to you. We're the only country or in the world, in the absolute world, that doesn't pay attention to older people. We give a rat's ass what 15-year-olds think as opposed to what 70-year-olds think. 70-year-olds been through some stuff. 15-year-olds don't know their ass from third base. But guess who we care about? 15, 20, 18-year-olds' thoughts. We have lost, in my opinion, we have lost the fundamental of educating for the long run. We educate for right now. And hey, guy wants to go to the NBA, God bless you. Good. His team was no good. They're better without him. Good. But the bigger issue is, man, I'm stunned by how people literally have no respect for education, no respect for sticking with something, no respect for toughness, hard work, and teamwork. It's amazing to me, and it's a problem in our country.
It's a good rant right there. I'll tell you who has an understanding of education and hard work. My man, the youngest 75-year-old in America, Leonard Hamilton.
Yes, sir.
Because I'll tell you one thing, and he always does talk about education. He always does talk about this whole transfer thing and how life's lessons that you learn by sticking something out. And he always talks about the value of education and not just going to school, but getting an education. And he gave Virginia an education yesterday. I mean, like, you saw Florida State. Now, how about this? And this you talk about substance. This you talk about maturity. This talk about culture. They have two pauses. And they come out of the second pause and absolutely whack Virginia, a team that does not beat themselves, a team that basically has great culture and great discipline and a great execution and does, you know, plays the game and tries to impose their identity on you. And Florida State yesterday put on a clinic. They put on a clinic on playing hard. They put on a clinic by playing unselfishly. They put on a clinic by their depth and wearing people down. They put on a clinic by being resilient. Virginia made that run, cut it to 7. They ran up 14 straight points. That shows the character and integrity of their team. Like, to me, Florida State and the Fighting Leonard Hamiltons yesterday basically sent college basketball on message saying that, you know what? We are the real deal. Now, the other part of this rant, and this is my rant to you, and I want to see what you think. So everyone now is up in arms. Oh, I'll tell you one thing. Virginia's unwatchable. They're unwatchable. No. I hate the way they play. They play so slow. Oh, my God. And this and that. And all they want to do is play defense. And the games are so boring. And then you have in the Big Ten, you have Iowa. Oh, Iowa, all they want to do is run up and down and score and shoot three-point shots and throw it to Garzilla, but they don't really play hard defensively. You know? Hey, America, like, make up your mind. Like, Iowa plays a fun style of basketball. They go up and down. You know what? You know, they have good wins. They're going to be dangerous in the NCAA tournament because they got a guy that's different. All right? Oh, by the way, you know what? You don't like them because they play too fast. They shoot too many threes, and they play freed up. Oh! Wait a second. You got Virginia on the other side. All right. Oh, my God. It's embrace the pace. Oh, it's on, you know, I got it. Come on. Like, make up your mind, America. Like, here's the deal. There's a lot of different ways to do the same thing and get to the same destination. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder. So here's it. I am in love with Florida State. I like watching Iowa play. And I like watching Virginia play. Get over it.
Well, that's a nice rant. And I will also add to that rant, that's one of the beauties of college basketball. Not everybody plays the same. May I add a team? I'm not so sure this wasn't the win of the year in college basketball, what Michigan did. You didn't
tell me, Drake.
No. Oh, that was good, too. No, Michigan going into the Kohl Center on a 21-day pause. Seth, nobody wins in a Kohl Center. Like 92% or whatever it is in a Kohl Center. So what does Juwan Howard and his crew do? They go in. They get down at half. They shake off the rust a little bit. And next thing you know, whap, 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 we're close. Whap, 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 we're closer. Whap, 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 we won the game. Let's go. I'm telling you, Juwan Howard, when John Beilein came to Michigan, he ran offense with counters and a bunch of different stuff that was different than everybody else. Juwan Howard, I'm not so sure, hasn't taken it to the next level. I think Juwan Howard is the National Coach of the Year in the country, depending on how it goes. Now, look, you go undefeated and you're Baylor, you go undefeated, you're Gonzaga, that's fine. But I'm telling you, at 14-1, coming off of what they came off of, going into that place against a veteran team, Seth, that was unbelievable what they were able to do winning that game. I'm telling you, Juwan Howard, the offense, Isaiah Livers, my God, like the dude is like he's playing in your backyard, just woo, whatever he wants. And I ain't mad at Drake either. I watched that game. That was a hell of a comeback without their leading scorer, Hempel.
Here's the deal. I'm gonna go Michigan and Drake, so we'll keep it in order. I knew what was going to happen. I knew it was going to happen because they got maturity. They got toughness.
But who's older than Wisconsin? Like, that's a game Wisconsin has to have.
Well, here's the thing. You had as many rebounds as Reavers and Potter because they had zero combined.
Yeah.
They had zero combined. Now, let me say that again. You had as many rebounds. There is something wrong at Wisconsin. I've said that 2 weeks ago. We talked about it. There's something not right. Senior teams, man, they go one way or another. Senior teams, they see the end of the tunnel. Senior teams, is sometimes there's jealousy. Senior teams have heard it all and kind of, especially in a pandemic, maybe they lost that fire or that intensity or that support. Whatever it is, Wisconsin's not right. They score 20 points in the second half. They give up 40 points in the second half. Now, a lot of that is Michigan, all right? I said, unplug my man, Hunter Dickinson, plug him back in. He had three games prior to that where he struggled. The guy was probably exhausted in terms of just the intensity of college basketball. What does he do? 15 rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds, 5 block shots, scored around the basket. Livers and Wagner are a joke. Brooks and Smith, perfect. They got an 8-man rotation. Beautiful. So, like, for the game, I have no doubt Michigan's going to come back in that game. It's just
well, you gotta call
who they
me.
Are.
I got to make a little scratch if you have
watch,
no doubt.
You should have watched Game Day show. I said there was no doubt in my mind. I mean, come on. Now you were on the air, though, so you pontificate. Now, I thought, here's my deal on Drake. Drake basically won the semifinals of the Missouri Valley Conference because by winning that game, they stayed alive to get an at-large bid. By winning that game, that was like winning a game that gets you to the finals of your conference championship. They lose that game, like, unless they won the conference tournament, they weren't getting that large bid, probably, because they hadn't beaten anyone. But by winning that game was a semifinal game in the Missouri Valley that gave them a chance to get to the final. Now they have the next 3 weeks to take care of business in the games that they're supposed to win. And now they get to the finals of the conference tournament they're in. Because that game got them in the NCAA tournament if they take care of business against the teams you're supposed to be.
I agree. I think that's a great way to put it. And I also think, Taylor, get ready with the sock if you don't mind, because I'm throwing a sock at Wisconsin, Taylor. Ah! Throw a sock at him. Just
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. I was texting with Marty Richter, one of the assistants at Drake, and he's like, man, I'm telling you, we just got tough dudes. You know what I mean? We just got tough, tough dudes. And he's not lying. They just have tough, tough dudes. May I move along for just a skosh real quick, Coach Greenberg?
Yes, because we're going to have Coach Self shortly.
Yes, we are. Let me go around that two bid leagues. two-bid leagues that aren't normally two-bid, like the Missouri Valley, Loyola, so people understand, Loyola is a top 25 team right now.
They are really good.
Yeah, I mean.
Nikolai Jokic didn't play well on Sunday, though. Nikolai Jokic didn't play well. Krautwood.
No. All right. But as we move forward with this, like, I don't know, is Belmont an NCAA team if they don't win their conference? Are they
don't have wins, but man, you watched them play.
Seth.
They are good, man. I mean, they are good. Five guys in double figures, second in the country in assists per game. I mean, like second in the country in field goal percentage. And they got Nick Mazinski, a big kid who can step out. He can score in the block. Grace Murphy is 6'2", tough as he had a triple double this past weekend. I mean, I'm just telling you, Belmont is really good, really good.
They won 17 in a row. Like, yeah. You know, do they become 22-1? I mean, you know, I'm curious as we move forward, what's going to happen here with some of these teams like that. I'm always curious about it because I think, like, look, all right, Wichita State, hey, coach there's got them 12-4, Seth, 8-2 in the league. You know, Memphis, everybody kind of counted them out. They're 8-3 in the league. How much do you think record in this, what I was going to get at, how much do you think record in the league is going to matter because we've had such a restricted non-conference season?
I think it's going to be your, I don't think it's going to be record. I think it's, they're going to, I think the committee's going to weigh your quality wins versus your bad losses.
But I can't get quality wins, you know, in my league.
Yeah, but so they might have to look at your quality wins within your league. But if you have bad losses within your league, you know, that could hurt some of those teams. Now, here's the deal. Like a bad loss in the Big Ten, I think the bigger question for the committee is this. Big Ten, Big 12, you're going to have losses. You're just going to have losses. You got seven teams in the top 25 or eight teams in the top 25 in those two leagues. I mean, you're going to have losses. So, like, how does the committee look at teams that don't have a great record? Minnesota doesn't have a great record, hasn't won on the road. But you know what? You know, they have good wins. How's the committee going to look at teams that have
– Indiana's 11-9.
Yeah, exactly. But they've got good wins. They've beaten Iowa twice. How many teams can say they beat Iowa twice? So, I mean, I think that's going to be an issue. I think with those teams that are trying to get a second bid, I think as long as they don't have that loss, like, you know, like can Houston can afford to lose to East Carolina? Can Belmont afford to lose to Southeastern Illinois?
Well, they lost to Samford. You know, that's their only loss. It's their only loss.
It's their only loss.
I mean,
they won 33 out of the last 30. They won 33 out of the last 34. They're like 120-30 over the last 5 years.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, in this year, when, you know, Belmont's never historically been afraid to play teams. You know, let me ask you.
They lost the Orlando tournament. You see, they were in the MTE with Michigan State and in Orlando with all those teams in Orlando.
Right.
They lost that. And then the other three games, when the NCAA went and said that 27 is the max, they lost three other guarantee games because I've talked to their people about it. So they lost their opportunities.
So how do you judge that? You can just go by what you did, right? I mean, is that it? I would have.
Yeah,
a hard
I think
time
you go by that. What you did, and then you watch their team. I mean, like, and they say that they take into the analytics. Well, if you look at the analytics of that team, offensively, very few teams have better analytics offensively. They're sixth in offense efficiency. They make every shot they take. They get every shot they want. They play at a ridiculously fast pace. They're a lot like, they play a lot like Creighton offensively. They really do. I spent a bunch of time last week watching them. They're fun to watch.
I want to jump back to the Big Ten because Sunday it's Ohio State against Michigan. And, you know, that's as big a game as we're going to have because you got number three and number four playing each other. And I don't think number one and number two are going to play each other, right? They tried to, Baylor. What do you see Ohio State versus Michigan coming up Sunday?
Here's the thing. Tell me if I'm wrong, and you know that league better than I do. Ohio State plays physical offense. I mean, like people talk about physical defense. Ohio State plays physical offense. What I mean by physical offense is they screen hard. They cut hard. They drive you and put you on their hip. They make – if they're going to post up, they're going to stick you and drive you back. They drive to contact. they're
that's a
physically
great, that's
strong.
Exactly right. They drive to contact. That's a hell of a way to put it. That's really good. I'm using that, and I'm not footnoting you.
Well, don't at me then, okay? Don't at me anymore. But and then Michigan is more free-flowing, but they do play through their post. So, I mean, like, I think it's a phenomenal game. It'll be interesting to me because I look at Ohio State. They're better defensively than people think. Because I'll tell you what they do. I look at Chris Holtmann the way I look at Von Kruger, and I've been saying this for weeks. He takes what you do well and takes it away, and then he exploits what you don't do well. The problem is when I look at Michigan, I'm trying to figure out, all right, what you do. Who do you take away? Do you take away Isaiah Livers? Is that the one guy you need to take out of a game? I don't know. Is it you're gonna limit Dickinson's touches? I don't know. Are you going to make it harder on Michael Smith? I don't know. So I think the decision on what to give and what to take away from Michigan is really hard. Do you gap Franz Wagner and now all of a sudden that his defender becomes a gap help defender and dare him to make shots? I don't know. But I do know that Chris Holtmann, he does a great job of Von Krugering someone, attacking their weakness, and then basically exploiting, you know, his strength. I mean, I just think he's phenomenal at it. I think you watch him, he reminds me so much of watching this Oklahoma team, which is the same thing they're doing. I still think Michigan's better.
You know, one of the things that drives me nuts about fans is they'll say, well, the coach made no in-game adjustments. So I always say, okay, what adjustment did you want to see? Right? And people don't know the answer to that. But Chris Holtmann will. And one of the things that he will do is he'll take the post first. Say, all right, Dickinson, are we going to double? When are we going to double? And he has it all set up. We may not double. We may double on the first bounce. We mm-hmm. may double on the catch. We may double and then back off as soon as he dribbles out away from the basket, or we may stay and make him a passer and get everybody on the ball side of the basket. Chris Holtmann is really, really good yep. at those type of things. Then what he's – and Beilein was great at that. Beilein was so good at that. And then he'll figure out, all right, during the game, like Bill Belichick said, every game's organic. You got to coach this game. He'll okay, Wagner's not going in this game. You know, like he's not playing well. I can tell he's a driver in this game, not a shooter. So he'll play off and use that guy to help. So those are the things. You come in with a plan, and then you've got, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G underneath it. And really, it's the same thing with offense. Like, I'm telling you, this Justice Suing, he is the kind of guy in a game like this could go get 25. Well, we got the Hall of Famer, head coach of Kansas, Bill Self. That simple, coach. Your thoughts on dealing with your team during a pandemic? And you know what? You're getting some criticism because your team isn't, you know, winning every game. So how are you dealing with all this?
The how you handle the team, I don't know that I've done a great job with it. I don't know if I've done poor, but it is so different. And I think Seth and I spoke about this before. It's like you want to be demanding as you ever were. But I really think our society, and of course kids are part of that, are so fragile right now because of the isolation, because of the friendships that they can't see, the families they can't see. And you know, misery loves company, as we all know as coaches. And so guys leave practice miserable and they go hang out with miserable guys. And then they come back and the next morning, guess what they do? They hang out with miserable guys. And so we tried to at least be better as far as more understanding and empathetic towards the situation. But, you know, when you lose 5 out of 7 at Kansas, you know, that kind of goes out the door. So it's been fun. This is a great group. I've even had guys that's been in the program 4 years saying, coach, this is the best group of guys we've ever had. And I think that's kind of been one of our issues, to be real candid with you. We like each other so much that we don't keep each other accountable like we should, where there's just not guys like the Frank Masons or the Devontae Grahams or the Josh Jacksons of the world that don't care. All they want to do is play good ball and win. And sometimes I think we're a little soft on each other. But I do think we're playing better now. It's been a fun year. It's been challenging. It's been a great opportunity to lead. But hopefully now, getting into mid-February, we're playing our best ball.
Coach, how do you deal with, like, these kids have such unrealistic expectations, and there's so much static around them, even in a pandemic. How do you deal with the mental aspect of it? Because, like we just said, Jalen Johnson, he decided to opt out. But, like, you're going to see kids that they're dealing with more than they normally would deal with. And, you know, you're not dealing with a ton of freshmen, but you're dealing with sophomores and juniors that have expectations. Look, this was their time. They were going to step up, and, you know, this was going to be their team. How do you deal with the expectation, and when all of a sudden they realize, like, being the guy is a little harder? Getting that opportunity is not as easy as it looks. And the mental part of it, how difficult is that?
I actually think, you know, you guys know this, you know, when you're on the second team, and we call it our red team, you know, that shirt fits a little different than it does when you switch over to the blue team. And what we have done, we've really done a great job of this over the years. We've recruited unbelievable guys that fit what we do, that allow the best players to be best players. And now those guys have gotten the role of being the best player, and they probably weren't recruited to be that role. And we've really done pretty well, to be honest with you, but it's a new role for everybody. It's a new role for families. It's a new pressure. You know, before, you recruit Ochai or Christian Brown or guys like that. Every program has it. A Marcus Garrett, a David McCormick. If they don't play well and we lose, they're not usually the headlines or what's talked about on social media. And now those guys have switched roles. And now when they do well, they get the credit, much deserved. But when things go poorly, they're also putting themselves out there a little bit. And that's a difference, I think, with a lot of players that they go through that they're dealing with, and the pandemic, and also being isolated from families. And, you know, one also thing about this, and you guys know this, I bet you up until this point, when you look at all the mock drafts and things like that, up until this point, there's been 90 guys that are first rounders. And there's 30 picks.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
But because it switches every week, if you play, if you get a two good games. And even though we don't put that, we don't talk about that, and we shouldn't cause that shouldn't raise alarm. But in kids' minds and families' minds, now they're playing, oh, God, I got to protect something rather than go take it. And I think that happens a lot. I think it happens with teams too. You're playing not to lose as a plan to win. And I think sometimes players do that too. When everything, like for instance, if a kid opts out, and I'm not referring to a Johnson at Duke at all. I know nothing about that situation. If he's being told, well, the worst I can do is go sixth in the draft, all you can do is hurt yourself. The mindset isn't probably, well, I want to be four. The mindset is I don't want to be 12. So you try to protect something that you don't rightfully own. And I think all players are going through that.
At least the
ones that are playing the lion's share of the minutes.
How much do you have this conversation with your players individually and collectively?
Not much, Dan, probably to a fault. I'm very big of being transparent and honest with the guys, but there's some things I don't want them to feel that, well, he's, you know, sometimes players, like for instance, you've done this, Seth has done this 1,000 times. We can get a better shot than that. What does a player hear?
Took a bad shot. Yeah.
That's what they hear. And I think it's sometimes like that with this situation. All coaches are selfish. They want to win. And they, in order to win, your best players have to play the best. I mean, and so we want all those good things to happen for guys. But I think sometimes players misinterpret, hey, this is how we need to play. This is how you need to play to give us the best chance and you the best chance to be successful, when maybe sometimes they're hearing something totally different from their respective people. We've been really fortunate. Our parents have been great, all these things. But it is something that goes through all kids' minds. I think this has some success.
I think that's so funny because when my guys were seniors at Tech, and I had Xavier Dandell and Jamon Gordon, so I met with him separately first. So I said, Zabe, I said, what's the thing that kind of most bothered you? And he goes, Coach, you were always kissing Jamon's ass, and you were always hard on my ass. And then I brought Jamon in, I said, Javon, so what was the biggest thing that you liked? And what was the biggest thing that drove you crazy? He said, Coach, I know Zabe was your guy, and you always ride my ass really, really hard. I said, so I brought them both in together. I said, both of you guys are screwed up. I can tell you. Because you didn't hear a damn word I was saying to you. You only worried about what I was saying to the other guy. I mean, it's just – it's the way it is.
The whole thing you could say, and it's probably the same way with us. If somebody's being critical of your broadcast, which I know with you two, that's probably never occurred whatsoever. Never. But if somebody's being critical and they tell you 10 good things, the one thing that you're going to hang on is the one negative thing. And I think players do that all the time too. It's like, hey, the reason we got this basket is because, you know, David ran the floor. He forced help, allowed the trailer to be wide open. You know, and you give credit to where it's due. But the second you say, come on, David, that's not a shot. God dang, we can do better than that. You got two guys draped all over you. Pass the ball. They hear he doesn't want me to shoot, and all he wants me to do is be a passer. You know, so you know how that works.
So like the league is brutal. I mean, the league is brutal. It's probably deeper than it's been in a while. When you look at you went through that rough patch, but now that you've got an opportunity to kind of gain some momentum per se, even though you got to have to play well. If you don't play well in your league, you're not going to win.
Right.
What are you trying to get accomplished in like the next 2 weeks? Because I mean, you're getting close to the tournament.
To be honest with you, I told our guys yesterday, I want them to play with the freest mind that they ever have, to have the most fun. You know, we go to K-State today. We play tomorrow, and that's a game that it's a rivalry game, so it should be a fun game. And then we got Tech and Texas and Baylor to end it. So there's four fun games to play, and I'm looking at it like that. Here's what you guys have both been through this, and I went through it at Oral Roberts and Tulsa, is that it's hard to motivate a team in February if you don't feel like you have much to play for. I mean, think of the pandemic and think of, all we got is a conference tournament or whatever. At least a conference tournament gives everybody hope to keep playing and that kind of, but it's hard. When I was at Oral Roberts, we're not in the league, no conference tournaments, you're losing 18 in a row. I mean, how do you get the guys motivated? You know, you shoot baskets for ice cream after dinner. I mean, and I'm being dead serious. So we've been fortunate. We haven't had to deal with that at Kansas much, but to be honest with you, we felt the dog days this year more than we have, you know, losing 5 out of 7 and getting home at 3:30 in the morning. And then with the pandemic, you know, you end up playing 2 days later with no prep time and things like that. It's just been interesting, but it's also been good for us. I mean, we're playing basketball, so it can't be all bad. I mean, we'd rather be doing this than anything else, but it's just been a very unique situation. I think that we have more to play for, just as much to play for as we have every other year. I told our guys, hey, the storybook season's done. I mean, it's done. Okay. The storybook ending still yet to be played out. I mean, that's still in play. And even though on paper, people may say, well, they're not one of, you know, the top 10 or whatever. And I would say, you're right. We're not right now. You know, who knows? I mean, 2 weeks from now, this thing could totally flip. And it could totally flip the other way. So I think our guys will be excited to play this last sport without question. And we're the one team in our league that hasn't missed a game. Everybody else has missed 4 games, 5 games. We haven't missed it. So due to COVID requirements. So we got a chance to hopefully finish strong and watch everybody else sweat it out a little bit.
Two questions. One, I want to follow up on it. Hey, Coach, why do you think you haven't missed a game? What have you guys thought you've done differently? And then the second is, you mentioned your team's playing better. In your mind, you know, I know fans, we all have these things, but in your mind, what are you doing better?
Our ball screen defense is much better, Dan. Much better. We changed, you know this, whenever you change an offense 2 days before a game, it's going to suck. and then 3 weeks later, it may look pretty good. Yeah. And that's kind of, I think that's kind of where we're at. We changed our ball screen stuff, I would say, 4 weeks ago. And it wasn't any good, but with our perimeter quickness and some things that I thought that we were struggling with, that, you know, that we thought we could take a couple of things away if we just get good at a couple of things, it's gotten better. It's gotten better. So right now I feel like we're guarding actions much better. I think we're not guarding players as well as we need to, but we're guarding actions much better. So that would be something that I think that that gives me reason to believe and hope that we're going to be playing our best ball. But, you know, our defensive stats have not been great, but they need to be great because we're going to go through stretches where we don't score the ball easily. But David McCormick's emergence, you know, he's averaging basically 15 a game in league. If he can give us 16, 17 a game going from this point forward, you know, you can play through a big NCAA or low scoring games. Usually, you know, if you can get to 70, I think that, you know, if you guard, you got a chance. And I do think there's some things going on, and we got three guys that can all stretch it. Two of the three need to make shots the same night. But I think we're capable of that.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, I was going to ask, what have you done in the pandemic? Why do you think you guys haven't been affected like others?
You know, I think as much as anything, it's luck. You know, I'd like to say that we do everything right. We don't. You know, it's luck. But we are unique in that we've got a dormitory that we're the only ones in there. I mean, we're the only ones in there. We got a situation that you can't enter the dorm. You know, how much fun is it for the players? You can't enter the dorm if you can't get fingerprinted to get in, and then you can't bring guests in. We've been able to keep our players away from the people they love the most, their families, on road trips and things like that. By if they want to talk, they have to wear masks. Players have to wear goggles, and there was a 15-minute limit, and you have to be socially distanced in a room, and we have a compliance person monitoring it. I mean it's not a true bubble by any stretch, but it's as close to probably a collegiate bubble as you possibly can. And you know, the one game that we did miss, we missed Tarleton early in the season because Billy had a couple of guys test positive right before we played. But we've been really fortunate with that. And you know, like Baylor, you know, and Gonzaga early in the season, you know, they're doing everything they possibly can, right? But all it takes is just, you know, go home for Christmas and have Christmas dinner, and you know, that could totally wipe a team out, just one player.
I'm trying to think, how do I sneak a beer in if I play to Kansas right now on a Saturday afternoon?
You could do it. You may have to be pretty creative, but I don't think that would be that difficult to do. I can't imagine that you ever drank during season, though. That would be very hard for me to believe.
As I told Coach Knight, Saturday after wins only. That's it. Yeah, Saturday after wins, boss. That's it. Yeah.
So speaking of that, what's the craziest thing that you had to go through or you've done during the pandemic? You didn't grow the beard out.
No, well, I did it for a little bit, and I realized once it gets past a certain length, it just stops. So that wasn't a good look. I actually became kind of not a grill master, but I got me one of these big Traeger grills. You know, I mean a big one, and I started cooking all the time. I read a lot. I shouldn't say I read a lot. I read a lot about NCAA. Investigation type things a lot, which definitely, you know, could impact my life. So I did some of those things. I bought a bicycle and that kick lasted about a month or two. That was about it. And then I got a golf simulator so I could go bang balls.
Good move.
But I haven't really taken advantage of that like I should. My handicap went from, you know, a 10 to a 9.5 after I used it for a long time. So that didn't really excite me much, I'm just trying to stay busy. Yeah.
We had Kunzo Martin on last week. We decided he has the best beard in college basketball. So I was just, you know, we were trying to, you know, kind of evaluate beards. Doc is just trying to grow a beard now, and it just looks like stubble.
I did that. You know, I don't know what it's called, Just for Men or Grecian Formula or whatever it is, but I got tired of purchasing it whenever I did mine.
Hey, I had a little bit too much wine with my wife and my stepson, and I ended up shaving my damn head. And everybody told me it's low maintenance. This is a pain in the ass. I ain't gonna lie.
You're so full of crap. I mean, this is the best you ever look. You had that. You used to put rubber stuff on top of your head.
Leave me alone. We're not talking about me. What'd you learn when you read up about NCAA investigations? What'd you learn?
Oh, no, I wasn't reading about particularly investigation. I was researching books and articles in going way back to maybe some of the shoe wars that have transpired over time. I think Norm Ellenberger's name did come up. Dan Wetzel, I never knew him to be one of the greatest authors of all time, but certainly I read his stuff and everything else. But it's been interesting. You know, that whole deal that we've gone through has been, you know, it's been something that to be honest with you, I wouldn't wish that on anybody, especially the way it's played out through the media and things like that. But the whole thing is we can't wait. We're looking forward to our day that we can actually, you know, have our day in court. So it's just been a pain in the ass, you know, from a perception standpoint, you know, with recruiting and whatnot, you know, over the last couple of years.
Yeah. When do you think that you guys have a time frame so that you can have some closure so you can move on? I know you can't mention the names. You got some commitments from some younger players. I mean, like,
yeah, we signed two, you know, we signed Zach Clements and KJ Adams, and we got one other commitment. I think that, you know, I'm hopeful in the next 6 months, something like that, but I don't know the exact time frame. It could be nine, yeah. It could be whatever, but certainly we're hopeful that we can come to a conclusion, you know, before we get too far into next year, without question.
Do you think it's affected your recruiting?
I don't think it. I know it. Yeah. So, you know, the one thing is with this, and, you know, everybody's got obstacles. You know, there's a lot of people like to have the obstacles that we have. We still got as much to sell as anybody based on where we are right now. I always get a kick out of somebody saying they have the best. Well, that's BS. The best is in the eye of the person you're recruiting. What's best for them? That's what's best. But we would check a lot of boxes and we still do. I mean, when you talk about our program and recruit to our program, but there is something that you have to deal with each family and each kid. You have to be honest with them and tell them what's going on and everything. And so this thing has started, you know, obviously in post-trial 2018, which puts everybody on notice big time. It puts everybody on notice big time. And the whole thing is the expectations are, or not the expectations, the what is being presented to the public is worst case scenarios. And worst case scenarios, could this happen, Coach? Well, in theory it could. In theory, it could. It's not going to, but in theory, it could. I mean, that's kind of the way you kind of defend that. And it's really that there's not really a much of a defense. You just be honest with them. So has it hurt recruiting? It's hurt us tremendously up until this point. But we still got good enough players. I mean, we still got good enough players. But when people talk about we may not have the elite guys that we've had, you know, in some of the years past, I would say, well, that may be true. As far as you're looking at NBA draft boards and things like that, but we got guys good enough to win. We were ranked third in the country in January, so I mean, we got guys good enough to win, so that we got no excuses.
Coach, did you ever think about resigning?
Hell no. See that's exactly that you know, and I say this with all seriousness. That's exactly the image and portrayal that's been presented to people. I'm saying we hadn't done anything wrong. Why would I run from this? I mean, I'm not running from this at all. And my resolve is as strong now as it ever has been. And I'm as excited about the future as I ever have been. We just got to get through this. But that's the kind of things that you know, a recruit could say based on what you asked me was something another school would put in people's minds. And when you kind of get hammered that way, it's one of those things that even if it's 50-50 or close, and that could be something that could sway somebody. But not even a thought process, not one time. And I will not believe that or think that ever. So,
that's why I asked you the question, because I want you to get the opportunity to get this out there to people. Yeah. And say, hey,
but you got to understand something, too. We can't talk about it. So if you can't talk about it because of the confidentiality things and things like that, that basically you can kind of be a pinata, take a lot of hits and, you know, yeah, let's just grin and bear it. And then if you talk about it, a story becomes another story. So my players have been great. This hasn't affected my team at all. And it hasn't affected my staff and it hasn't affected me in preparation. Now, has it affected my mind as far as maybe having a few things on my plate to think about instead of having relaxation and things like that? Sure it has. But, you know, that's goes for the course. We've had a pretty good run here for a long time. And if this is the biggest hiccup, if this is the biggest hiccup we've had, you know, nobody wants to go through it, but we'll get through it and be fine.
All right. Last one, just walking into the fog with no one in there. How strange is that to play a game?
Well, I think it's strange for everybody. I think it's different levels.
But that building's just different, Coach. Come on. That building, that shit swaying back and forth.
I think Dan, I don't know if you played here when Jock made the shot. Were you playing when you were coaching? So, the place is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You know, the best home court I've ever been to, ever, was Assembly Hall in Bloomington when they had Jared Jeffries and Tom, we called him Coverell because he actually had no D in his game at all. So we called him Coverell and you had Fife and AJ and Moye and Newton, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm leaving out Hornsby. The guards, when we went there, was 16 to 21 from three. The guards. And they rocked us good when I was at Illinois. And I told my staff, hey, just sit here. Let's just sit here and take it because we got nothing for them today. That was unbelievable atmosphere. I think ours is like that. And I'm sure it's like that there more than just that one time. But ours, it feels like to me, ours is like that 10 times a year. You know, we got a unique setup. And so to Seth's point, you know, I'm a big believer in this. I'm a big believer when momentum's going your way, let's extend it as long as we can. And when momentum's not, we got to curtail it immediately. Well, what do we do? Whether it be life or whatever, what do we do? It's when momentum's not going our way, you take for granted the reason we curtailed it was not because of play a lot of times, is because they wouldn't allow it to continue. There was a way that you're down 62 to 52 and you make one basket or one free throw and all of a sudden the place is sparked, you know, where you've been getting your butt beat the whole game, but the place is sparked to a point where that allowed you to go on a mini run. We don't have that now. You know, we don't have anybody. We have to create our own energy, which I know that other people have to do the same thing. It's not an excuse. But we've been, you know, I think we've lost 15 times since I've been here in 18 years, and the whole thing is it should be 35, it should be 40, you know, it could be whatever, but the people here just hadn't allowed it to happen. So we don't have that like we've had in the past.
You know, I went to the Indiana Kentucky game or the Indiana Purdue game. I went there a month ago, and I swear to you, just having been in that arena for 17 years, Indiana would have won that game. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah. I think it's that much because exactly what you said, man. It's going back and forth, but boy, that place just boom.
There's a point in time where a little thing, it's a two possession game, and your opponent can't communicate because of the noise level and one guy not execute like they're supposed to do. And you come away with nothing as opposed to coming away with two. I mean, there's so many little things that can happen with that. And then on the flip side, we've always taken the best, most pride in playing in full arenas everywhere else, because usually, and I know there's other places like this, but you know, we're usually circled on a lot of people's schedule in our league and things like that. So of our losses that we've had on the road in our league, 50% of them's been a court storming, you know, which is bad, but it's also, God dang, they think enough of us to at least do that. You know, it's kind of like this past week, you know, we fell out of the polls and worst team ever fell out of the polls. And I'm like going, guys, we've been in the polls for since 2009 every single week, and 1 week we actually are going through what the majority of America is going through, but we just get kind of spoiled here. That's no question about that.
Yeah, that's a bad place. Is a magical place, man. I mean, it really is.
I don't want to bring this up, but we were down. You guys saw the game, maybe, but we're down 14 to Hugs, and they're loaded. I mean, they're good. We're down 14 to Hugs, with 2:41 left, and you know, it's like one guy makes one shot. You know, next thing you know, guy makes another shot, we end up winning that game. But that doesn't even come close to happening if we're not playing here. You know.
Yeah, at your place, people are so smart. You know, there's certain places that like sports, but there's certain places that are really smart. Kick a dive out of bounds, save a ball, and that ignites your crowd, you know, because they understand the meaning of it.
Yeah. That's it's one of our best recruiting pitches, even though it doesn't mean anything to a 17-year-old. But, you know, we're the only school in America that can claim that James Naismith was your basketball coach. I mean, there is plenty of generational pride that guys take in trying to understand the game, because they feel like this is kind of where it wasn't invented here, but this is kind of where collegiate basketball was invented. So because of Dr. Naismith being our first coach.
Hey, Seth, I did one game there. You playing Omaha a few years ago, and I didn't like, you guys are great. I like Kansas is great, but you know, I think Omaha is a pretty good mid-major team. I think they're going to be tough to Kansas fans still kill me by saying Omaha was good. I was besmirching Kansas, and I'm like, wait a second. I said, man,
I'm surprised our fans would ever get over anybody that's get on to anybody that says anything negative about us. I know Seth.
Oh, I know
Seth never caught any crap from us.
It wasn't even negative. It was Kansas is great. They're top five. But Omaha's good, okay? You know.
Hey, Bill, for all those people that are killing me, just remember to tell them, I understand they're killing me. I have a job to do. I'm 1-0 in the fog, and the reason I am retired for life is I will never freaking go back there again to coach a game.
Oh, that's probably why they're pissed at you, because you brought your Long Beach State team in here. What year was that, like 93?
Yeah, 93 was number one. We just lost by 100 points to Sonny Smith's VCU team at VCU. We flew from California to Virginia, played the same day we landed. They beat us by 1,000. Then we flew that next morning, Sunday morning, to Lawrence, played from a big Monday game, which for some reason they needed a game on Monday because it was an off week in league. And we had a good team. We had two pros on our team. I mean, we had a good team.
But I'm sure you chartered from Richmond. I'm sure you chartered from Richmond.
Long Beach to Richmond.
Yeah.
Coach, we found the cheapest tickets possible, and we stayed in the old Hallett Dome in Lawrence.
Yeah. Well, that's now the Double Tree. That's now the Double Tree. So.
Oh, man. That was fun. But, hey, we appreciate you doing this.
If
Thank you
get
so much.
Talking about Greenberg's wins – yeah, but he'll be here all day talking about the wins. He won't talk about getting his ass beat at home by my Bowling Green team. He don't want to talk about that. But
you
if the wins,
cheated.
You'll be out here for 3 hours.
It was my first year. I was rebuilding.
All right.
Ran off the court.
Hey. Seth's like a guy that plays golf. Instead of writing down his score, he writes down, well, I pushed the first one right, and then I pulled it into the trap, and then I left one in the trap, and then I pitched up, and I made the putt, and I made a five.
Yeah.
You know, like, who cares, right?
Right. Hey,
the only thing I put down at the end of the day is if I won cash or not. And the last time I played with my boy Dockage, I had him walking in, kind of cleansing himself in the water. Tell that story, Dan Dockage.
I had to go get baptized in the ocean. Hey, Coach, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. All right.
Thanks.
See you.
Be safe, Bill. That was great.
Awesome. That'll break some news.
Hey, that's our lead. Your question on you ever think about quitting?
Yeah, I think so, Taylor.
Absolutely.
I think that's the lead. He was good.
Yeah, he was really good. Very. You guys always get him talking. God, you're good.
He's easy to get talking.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is. People, That is the world's greatest podcast. Wherever you download your podcast, you need to download this podcast because this is one of the great podcasts in the history of life. Make sure you rate us. There's only one rating. It's a 5. The world's greatest podcast known as Courtside. Thank you for listening, and we will talk with you next week. How's that?
I'm opting out. I'm opting out of the rest of the podcast.
I can understand that. Nah, throw a sock at him.
Ah!
Ah!
Nah! Nah!
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.